WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Gun violence is a complex issue, but all across Chicago, people are working on the ground to reduce shootings and homicides. Mental health resources, street outreach, jobs, education, violence interruption, conflict resolution, peace building. We checked in with folks working on some of those issues as a way to reduce violence in the city. Cedric Hawkins is Strategic Initiatives Manager with Chicago CRED. That's a nonprofit working to reduce gun violence. Laquay Boone is the group's Deputy Head of Programs. And Dwayne Hunter is Outreach Supervisor for West Garfield Park for the Institute for Nonviolence Chicago. We also heard from Rita Oseguera, who's a reporter for The Trace, a newsroom centered on shining a light on gun violence. Cedric starts by describing how street outreach works.
Yes, so as far as street outreach, a typical day, the outreach workers would check into a hub. We will brief on what's going on in the neighborhood, where violence is being concentrated. Later on in the day, we will go out and start our engagement by canvassing in the community, trying to find out what needs to be done to be able to reduce some type of violence in whatever area that we're in. Later on, we go on sales, get on Salesforce, put things in the system to make sure that the data is being obtained. Mm-hmm. And then we'll debrief at nighttime when the day's over and get back to it the next day.
And when you say where violence is being concentrated, how are you hearing about it? Is it sort of a word of mouth or?
So when it, as far as violence in the neighborhood, we're hearing about it word of mouth. We're hearing it from participants. We're hearing it from the community. We're getting it from CPICs. It's just coming from all over. So anytime it's some violence, we're getting
it. Firsthand information. What pushed you to get involved in this work?
So for me, I had nine family members who passed away to gun violence.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
So that's one of my main reasons behind it.
Yeah, that's a motivator. Absolutely. Dwayne, I want you to talk about the power then of meeting people and intervening right there in the areas that are most impacted by gun violence. There's something about doing the work right there in that neighborhood.
Well, for the most part, we practice a hyper-local approach, being from the community that we're working in and knowing the dynamics of what's going on in that community. And I'm from West Garfield Park.
Yeah.
You know, being one of the, per capita, it's the deadliest community in Chicago. And, being right there in the community and being from the community, it's easy for me to find out what's going on. And I take that approach every day when I come out to work, you know.
What's the mental approach, knowing that, like you said, you're about to go work in the deadliest neighborhood?
It's the community that I was raised in, so it's always been that, you know, so I know the community so well.
And it's become the norm.
It's normal for most. It's not normal, but we accept it.
It's the West Garfield Park norm, or has become that, right?
Yes.
I understand, Laquay, that you have worked in trauma-based therapy. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
That's
so what does that look like, so that we're clear, especially when it comes to addressing gun violence?
Absolutely. So that hyper-focuses on meeting the individual where they are and not causing, you know, more harm, but being aware of what trauma looks like, how trauma shows up, how an individual, two different individuals may experience the same event and one may experience trauma from it and one not. And so you're sitting down with an individual and you're having a conversation with them and talking about where they are, what are their experiences have been, and helping them to kind of process how that has impacted their life or how that has not impacted their life. And then when they're ready, processing their steps for how they move forward, because the trauma won't go away. The experiences have happened. And so how do they take one step every single day moving forward? Mm-hmm. And so you're meeting them where they are and coming up with strategies that work for them.
Do you ever encounter people that don't even realize that they've been traumatized?
Absolutely. I think as we talk about gun violence, it becomes so normal to populations and to communities that this is the way of life and this is what I've always known. And so sometimes what I'm talking about is abnormal. And so we're talking about a life where you are not always looking over your shoulder. You're talking about a life where you can get up and you can move around and incorporate some different areas to where the wider society may think that that's their absolute norm.
Rita, how does the mayor's plan fit into this approach? And what are the reactions that you have heard in response to his plan?
Yeah, so the mayor's plan takes a more hyper-local approach, and they're focusing on four specific areas. It's a mix of reviews from community members that I've heard from. Some, depending, like, if they're from that area, they're grateful for it because they are experiencing a lot of violence and they do want that approach. Other people feel left out, right? If they're not in those four hyper-local communities, then they're like, what about us? We also need these resources. This is also happening in our neighborhood. Mm. And it's like we said earlier, gun violence is happening everywhere. So it's a mixed review, I would say.
Cedric, what support do people need in the immediate aftermath of a shooting?
Whoa, that's kind of deep. So I would say first and foremost is...
And you can split it up. Give me immediate and then long term. And other folks can weigh in as well.
I would say immediately just to have some type of support, whether that comes from a clinician, outreach worker, or just someone who's doing CVI to be able to come speak with the family, speak with friends, stuff of that nature. After that...
CVI, violence interruption?
Yes. After that, I would say... just to be able to, after we have a conversation with them, just to be able to understand what their needs are and how we can help them. That's what I would say.
Mm-hmm. So getting it from the source.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes.
LaQuay, any thoughts? Immediate support, long-term support.
Immediate support is to be present, to show up. A lot of times people don't know that showing up is the biggest thing. And so the fact that you know something is just happening, you're willing to come out of your comfort zone and come and be in this space with me. And you may not necessarily have the right words or you don't have a solution today, but you're being able to be present. And I can also be present, not right? I can cry, I can not cry, I can mm-hmm. zone out, I can eat, whatever that is, but you're providing a safe space for me to be in that space and be able to move forward. And then long term, I think... Well, not think, but what we've experienced is that individuals and families need resources. So we need resources to talk about where we are, how do we develop, how do we extend from here. We need therapy, if that is, to make sure that that event does not stop you from being able to move forward in your life, mm-hmm. even if you have to move differently. You need connection to the wider community. And so knowing that even though it may have happened in that area or on that block, but there are additional resources outside of that block or that 2-mile radius that you can have access to, and we connect them with those resources. We don't push them.
Yeah.
And we don't, you know, force them to connect to different things, but we walk alongside them. And so as they're ready to take different steps, we're with them in that process. And I think as long as an individual has someone that says, I'm here for you, and we're going to get through this process with you, then they will be okay. And they'll let you know what additional resources, whether it be education or support or therapy or housing, they'll let you know as long as you're present and you're open to listening.
Yeah, the more conversation you have, the more you'll realize what their individual domino effect might be.
Absolutely.
Right? And to that point, Duane, I mean, it is important to support the survivors directly. But LaQuay mentions, you know, you do need to think about the people around them as well. So the family, the friends, the neighborhood. I mean, how do you all, with your group, how do you scale out that support to the people around the victim?
So we have a bunch of wraparound services for victims of gun violence, like the parents, the brothers and sisters that they're welcome to come to our office, and you know, we have therapy sessions, we have clinicians on site, and the business community in Chicago has just helped raise over $100 million for the SC2 scaling that'll bring more resources to the communities.
Okay.
Being West Garfield, Austin community, the Greater Garfield community, East Garfield and West Garfield Park. And that initiative is set to launch around January, where you have more resources and we could do more things to help those victims and those victims' families.
Mm. So we've talked about intervention and what to do sort of in the aftermath. What are prevention strategies, though, LaQuay? How do we get to this in the forefront?
You go younger, and so you have younger. To be very aware that the exposure to community violence and family violence, it starts really young. And so right now we focus on getting those young adults and really going at the individuals who are surrounded by either violence or triggers or just, you know, surrounded by bad or negative decision making. But if we really focus in and going to the youth where it's being exposed, they're watching brothers, aunts, uncles, cousins at 6, 7, 8 years old. And that's a time where oftentimes we're thinking about how we want to live our life and what we want to become and what we want to be when we grow up. And so we want to make sure that we're providing different outlets and exposing that generation and that group of young people to what are other options out there, but also what are other supports and how do they get them. So we don't want to just show them that there's other resources, but how do we guide them in that entire process? We don't just latch on to them at 8 and let them go at 10, but we latch on at 8
and
we stay. And we go in that community and we stay in that community and we continue to build out what the community needs most, and the community needs resources for our young people.
Yeah. Cedric and Dwayne, what are your interactions like with young people?
So it's different depending on the individual, but for the most part, when dealing with the young youth today.
Because the conversation, I mean, it's a little different, isn't it?
It's a lot different, you know, just trying to be able to understand them and where they're coming from, because when you're dealing with the youth, you have to know they're coming from different households. They're coming from different understandings, you know. And with that said, just trying to figure them out, you know, and trying to get their trust is an issue within itself. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So just working with them and just trying to be able to understand, and like LaQuay said, you know, meeting these individuals where they at, and down the line, just steady working with them, never giving up on them, because when it comes down to these youth, they don't know no better anyway. So giving up on them, they won't even know if you've given up on them, because they come from giving up on. No love in the house, you know, no food in the house, you know. They come up, they coming up this way. So if an individual starts to work with them for a couple of days or so or a couple of weeks and then they give up on them, they used to that anyway.
Yeah.
So just knowing who you're dealing with and just trying to be able to figure them out to be able to help them the best way that you can help them.
Those are good points. Dwayne, how do you work to try to dispel some of those narratives that young people sort of already have embedded?
Like Cedric said, it's tough because there's barriers when dealing with the youth, because you have minors and juveniles. You got to get consent. Well, in our organization, we have to get consent forms to deal with the youth of West Garfield Park, you know. So, you know, it's tough. Like, sometimes you can't even get in touch with the parent because the household structure is so messed up, you know. And the schools don't let most of the outreach workers in, because most of the outreach workers are convicted felons, you know. So it's just barriers that we got to go through, and we got to keep showing this labor of love, you know. So it get tough at
that
times.
Can get very tough. So overall, I mean, this is across the board, what is working in the city of Chicago? What do we need more of? In your view, you know, you're doing a lot of reporting on this topic, Rita. What have you heard folks say? What do they need more of, and what's working?
Yeah, the violence intervention work, the work that you guys are doing, it's just amazing. It's making such a difference on the ground, and I've talked to a lot of youth too. It's a priority of mine, and they love these organizations. They feel like they've saved their lives. They feel like they have mentors, someone to look up for, up to, and that's really important. So I would say that's definitely working from my conversations. What's needed is way more resources for survivors, which, going back to your previous question, is also a form of prevention, because you're preventing retaliation, you're preventing, you're getting to the root of those mental health issues.
Yeah.
And if you're shot once, it's statistically you're going to be shot again, or you're going to be in the environment that you were shot in. So like helping people move out of those environments or progress in their mental health, then that's all going to help too.
For sure. Workforce development is something that you focused on, LaQue, as a solution with Chicago CRED.
Absolutely. So workforce development was, so you have to think about, a lot of times is if we're doing the work and we're doing it well, then a lot of the men and the women we're working with will put the guns down. And so if they put the guns down, then who are they right now after they no longer are utilizing different resources to move forward? And so it's not just teaching the soft skills and the hard skills of how to get the job and how to maintain the job, but it's also focusing on their self-esteem and their confidence.
Yeah.
And so now you're having to represent yourself. And so who is this person that you may have never saw yourself to be? And so a lot of it is helping them to find themselves, to be confident, to be in a room and say that I belong to be here, I'm valuable, and I have something to offer. And so taking some of those transferable skills and certifications and putting them in a room where they can succeed.
And you're getting at a root cause.
Absolutely.
When you start with jobs, right? Cedric, what else do you want to see in the future?
In the future, I would love to see a better job at dealing with high power fire weapons, due to the fact that the individuals that are using these firearms, they are not trained, and that is an issue within itself. I would also love to see better education. I would love to see affordable housing. I would love to see more therapists, because I do understand today that a lot of this is based just around mental health issues, and just better employment.
Last word to you, Dwayne. In the future, what are you looking to see?
Well, I would love to see the organization, the orgs that all of us guys work for, do more collaboration and more...
Working together.
Yeah, working more together and, you know, bringing all our resources together to help the whole city as a whole, you know. Like, that's the most thing for me.
Yeah. We'll leave it there. We've been talking about solutions to gun violence with Dwayne Hunter of the Institute for Nonviolence Chicago and Cedric Hawkins and LaQue Boone of Chicago CRED, as well as Rita Oseguera, who's a reporter for The Trace. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode of The Reset Podcast was produced by Max Lubers. It was mixed by Ari Mejia and edited by Maha Ahmed. Reset pairs nuance and breaking news. So if this sounds like what you're looking for, make sure to check out our full archive of conversations at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you later.
My name is Liz, and as a teacher, I think that WBEZ provides endless sources that I can bring back to my students where they can also engage in a deeper understanding. I teach government, I teach U.S. history, and I have used sources from WBEZ in order to help enrich the understanding of my students.